Welcome to Richmond Recovers, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. I'm your host, Carol Olson, and weekly I invite in peers, providers, and agencies to discuss issues, legislation, and best practices to support healing and recovery from trauma, addiction, mental illness, and medical health concerns. On today's show, Gretchen Gray's local art therapist co-hosts with me, and we talk with local art therapists Leila Sade and Laura Tarmiso. As usual, we end with Sammy Styles and Peer to Ear and Community Calendar. After a short station break, we'll be right back with Richmond Recovers. Stay tuned. Welcome to Richmond Recovers, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. I'm Carol Olson, your host, and weekly I invite in peers, providers, and agencies to discuss issues, legislation, and best practices to support healing and recovery from trauma, addiction, mental illness, and medical health concerns.
Hello, my name is Gretchen Graves, and I am an art therapist here in Virginia. I will be co-hosting our show today with Carol Olson, another art therapist here in Virginia, and we have two other art therapists here with us, Laura Tumitsu and Leila Sade. We all work in various different locations. Leila works in an inpatient psych for children. I work in medical for children, and Laura works in
private practice with all ages.
And Carol?
Right now I do really some minimal private practice, usually working with families.
So today we're going to just talk to you a little bit about what art therapy is and our different locations and how we deal with different populations and our locations. I think I'll start over with you, Laura. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your practice and some of the populations you work with and age groups?
Sure, absolutely. Well, a lot of what drove my motivation to go into private practice was that I was seeing clients in the various agencies I was involved with before private practice and realizing that a lot of the underlying roots to a lot of the mental health issues that my clients are presenting with was the trauma that they had survived. And so I do primarily trauma processing with the clients I work with, and it's a combination. It's a specific model that has been created by, co-created by an art therapist and her late husband, and they have an sort of intensive outpatient program and then also trained therapists like myself. And so I use their model. It's a combination of narrative work and art making to help my clients to be able to process their trauma. And what I share with my clients is the heart of what it is all about is being able to tell their story from start to finish so that the brain is able to restore the memory in a place that's going to allow them to experience less symptoms. So that's the kind of the heart of what I do. And then I also work with some clients doing art therapy for other presenting issues.
What age population do you work with, Laura?
So the majority of my caseload are adults. I do work with a couple kids, but I've got a colleague in my practice that works with the bulk of the kids that we see.
And Leila, do you want to tell us a little bit about your work location and the populations you work with and age groups?
Sure. I work at Virginia Treatment Center for Children. It's an inpatient acute child psychiatric hospital in MCV. And I see children from ages 3 to 17, and their typical length of stay is 3 to 5 days. Sometimes we have kids that stay for 2 months. It just kind of depends on the situation. Primarily, the children have diagnoses that vary from PTSD to major depression, to psychosis. So the way that I work is kind of based in an open studio format, because I'm fortunate right now to have an art studio that I work in. I do a lot of drawing assessments so I can see what they're going through, go to treatment team meetings and portray what I see in the artwork and share it with the team. And then from there, I give them an art process that I feel would be beneficial for them, because I kind of have to act like I'll probably only see them one time because my job is ever changing. The only constant is change there. So that's kind of what I do a little bit.
Because you're inpatient psych, so they're constantly coming in and out of your facility.
Yes.
Yes. And Laura, when you have clients, how long do you typically see them? Do you have a set amount of time, amount of sessions that you see them or anything?
So I don't. We're fortunate to be in a situation where right now our clients are private pay, so we can really cater our treatment to what their needs are. But in terms of the flow that we typically tell clients when they first come in is that we will spend the first usually four sessions, first month or so, doing assessment and gathering baseline of how things are going for them, and then we come up with a treatment plan from there. But I would say in general, probably the average would be about 6 months to a year treatment.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the specialized training that you went through? Because there is art therapy training, which is a master's degree program, but you did some additional, you know, really postgraduate work in specific type of training. Can you talk more about that?
Sure, absolutely. So there's this fantastic facility out in Morgantown, West Virginia, led by Linda Gant, an art therapist. And they offer, like I said, a training for therapists who are interested in becoming certified trauma therapists. So that's what I decided to do in addition to my art therapy training. So that process is going for a week-long training, pretty intensive training at their facility. I believe they actually have moved into an online format for therapists now, so it's more accessible. And then from there, you go back and do a practicum where you're getting some firsthand experience using the model. And at that point, you become certified.
What are some of the other locations you can work on with that particular specialized focused?
Sure. So I could really see the benefits of it in so many locations. I think it is ideal to be in a scenario where folks are working a little more, well, obviously working long term with their clients, right, when it comes to trauma processing. So that would be a challenge for some of the facilities that have more short-term treatment. But I think I'm trying to think back too, in the group that we had a lot of private practice folks, but then we had a few folks that I think were in working in the corrections system, and some folks that were planning on going abroad, doing some international trauma processing work. So the ones that come to mind. But I think any type of long-term treatment facility could benefit from having certified trauma therapists.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Richmond Recovers, produced here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And today I'm co-hosting with Gretchen Graves, talking with local art therapists about art therapy. Now back to our show. And Layla, do you want to talk more? I mean, you have certainly a high percentage of clients who have trauma. Do you use any type of other specialized treatments for working with trauma survivors in an institution like you work in?
So because my facility is short-term and acute, I have probably 98% of my children that I see are survivors of trauma or are currently in trauma. But because we're an acute facility, we're supposed to, you know, stabilize them before then they can continue in outpatient treatment. So I operate mainly on a short-term, brief, you know, solution-focused therapy model, as well as incorporating a lot of mindfulness into my art therapy approach, so I can try and teach them the tools in a short amount of time on how to at least handle their current symptoms and then hope that they can continue treatment outpatient where they can go through their trauma. And art therapy is a great modality for that, especially for mindfulness-based techniques.
So I work in, this is Gretchen, and I work in a medical facility, and we often have kids in there that have trauma, although I don't think it's always necessarily identified as trauma because they're in a medical facility. And because they're there, their primary focus is to get well physically. And oftentimes their mental health will end up taking a backseat to the medical component, which makes sense where they are because it's a hospital. But I think that trauma comes into what I do often. And when I work with the kids, a lot of the modalities that I'm coming from, the ideas is like PTSD or trauma mindset, because they're all coming in usually with a new diagnosis or something that is constantly greatly impacting their lives.
You know, for me, working, I was originally trained working with medical illness, actually. And I originally went to school, an art therapy school for that, and then learned family systems therapy, just as sort of a focus of GW at the time. And interestingly enough, I really never worked or rarely worked with medical illness again, maybe for 1 year at Medical College of Virginia. Anyway, back in when they had the, as part of the Arts in the Hospitals program, it was the grant, the first art therapy grant they had there, where they hired an art therapist.
That's good that they had an art therapist. They currently have several music therapists, but they have a few contract art therapists, but no one full-time on staff right now. But when I work there, I'm not working with adults. I work with children. And that's always interesting because children don't always know how to process any kind of trauma. Most people don't really understand how to process trauma. But kids can't even verbalize what they're doing with their trauma. So everything they do, they have to do through basically symbolic language. And that's a lot of what I do, is try to take whatever they're doing and figure out what exactly they're going through, and then and help them process their journey through their medical trauma.
I so appreciate that, because I think that oftentimes we don't necessarily consider medical trauma when we're thinking about our lifelong story of the things that have been, you know, traumatic for us. And I have a lot of clients that once they are able to do the work around the medical trauma, it actually clears a lot of the symptoms that they weren't initially attributing to that. So I think there's this idea that we're when we're undergoing medical procedures is something that's there to, an occurrence that's there to help us get better. And we don't always necessarily think about how it comes.
Yeah, I don't think that people always think about the impact that it has on your being, everything that you go through, surgery, or if a family has a child that's diagnosed with cancer, and then it doesn't impact just that child. It tends to impact all of the family and any siblings, especially young siblings that are there. So it's a very important component to think about in medical treatment.
Mm-hmm. Layla, in working in an acute care hospital setting, do you get to work with families at all, or do they get a chance to engage in any family therapy services in such a short-term program?
The social workers provide family therapy at Virginia Treatment Center for Children. The only interaction that I really have with families is when parents are visiting their children on the units in the morning when I'm coming in. But I don't, right now I'm not doing any family art therapy work.
And your art therapy program is integrated into SOLs, is that right? Because you're part of the school.
So I don't have to do anything with SOLs, thank goodness. Because I'm not a teacher, I don't have a teaching license, so I can't abide by that. I am a part of the state operated programs, which is, they provide education programs in all different hospitals for school-age children, so I'm a part of that. I have a curriculum, so to say. It doesn't correlate with any SOLs, though. It's more about the psychoeducation that is the foundation of the art therapy in the schools.
And I work for the same SOP program. So it is a school program that's based in all hospitals and juvenile detention centers in our state, because children are mandated to be able to have a free education. So any facility that is state-run, they have to have a school there if they have children staying there overnight.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Richmond Recovers, produced here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And today I'm co-hosting with Gretchen Graves, talking with local art therapists about art therapy. Now back to our show. Art therapy has become such a hip thing. I know probably Gretchen and I, when we, being the older art therapists in the room, when we started out, you know, it was the obscure thing that you did.
Yeah.
So I would get a lot of questions of, what's that? And
do you look at drawings? And
can you read minds if you know what I'm saying when I draw? And
what does that painting do?
It was interesting, yes. And a lot of paranoia from friends if they drew their children's drawings. Like, I might find out secrets. It was interesting to be in that world and watch it evolve into, you know, it's talked about way more in public discourse about therapy. There's an element of now people saying that they do art therapy when they're not art therapists. They don't have that particular training. And so how do the people in the room feel about how the projection of art therapy is going? We used to worry a lot that there would be jobs after getting this degree. And now we work in a multitude of places. But how do you feel about the progress of art therapy as a career?
I am very hopeful about art therapy as a career. It is definitely getting a national highlight right now, and people are becoming aware of it. So that's great. On the other hand, because it is getting a national highlight, more people are going to find out about it, and more people are going to say that they do art therapy when they're not actually trained to do art therapy. So I think that although it's a great thing that we're growing, I think us art therapists are going to have to be very vigilant about making sure that other people that are saying they're practicing art therapy are actually doing that. And we have to be careful about informing the public to make sure that if they're going to see someone who's saying they're doing art therapy, they're really trained to do art therapy and didn't just, you know, take like an online 3-hour class about it. Because it's a very intensive training that we have, you know. We're all at least master's degree levels. Most of us have approximately 60 or more credit hours under our belts, not to mention hours and hours and hours of supervision after we get out of school. It's a highly trained field. Just because it's got the word art in it doesn't mean it's artsy fartsy.
Certainly, yeah. And just like any other licensed professional or certified professional, we engage in community education. We have so many credits to get a year to make sure that we're up and focused on the field and continue our competency levels as we go forward and are monitored for that. Laura's done some postgraduate work. How many other people in the room, and I've done some postgraduate work, how many have the rest of you done postgraduate work really to enhance your work as therapists?
I've definitely done some postgraduate. Well, I can't even think. I've done so many hours.
Well, you've done some study in
neuroart. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a special accreditation in doing neuroart therapy. I work with a lot of kids that have brain injuries and cognitive impairments. It really has helped my profession out a lot. So I've done some of that.
I was trained in the ADOS because I have hope to embark on more research in the future to promote art therapy. And I want to use that and compare it to an art therapy assessment for diagnosing autism. That's like in the future. But I've engaged in a lot of supervision towards getting my board certification and registered art therapist credentials, as well as being in supervision towards getting an LPC as well, and attended different conferences and symposiums, always trying to make sure that learning never stops.
I think that's really important. I've done a lot of the supervision things too. I've done training in things like MARI cards, and I think it is important for us to continually grow, and our field continually grows and expands as science learns more and more about how our brain operates and is affected by things. What about you, Laura?
Well, I was just thinking to respond to your question from earlier, Carol, about the where the field's headed. I feel a lot of gratitude oftentimes for the leaders in our field that have done so much work to get us to where we are today. And I agree with Gretchen. I feel hopeful where we're headed. And I think it's interesting because I'm in a more of a rural location in Virginia. It's been fascinating. I had did a little bit of work in Northern Virginia as well, so it's been fascinating to contrast where we are in the more rural settings compared to, you know, up in Northern Virginia, or even here in Richmond, in terms of awareness, and then kind of busting some of the myths of art therapy. And it does kind of – it does feel to me that we're playing a little bit of catch-up, but that's also – exciting to me to be in a more rural location and be able to be a voice and an educator for what art therapy is and how it can benefit.
We've been listening to Richmond Recovers, produced here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And today I'm co-hosting with Gretchen Graves, talking with local art therapists about art therapy. And all of us sitting in the room, and myself included, are part of the Virginia Art Therapy Association. Gretchen, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of that?
Oh, yes, we can talk about the history of that. It's actually really fun. Years ago, the Virginia Art Therapy Association had a chapter in Virginia, and then it went defunct. And I don't know how long it was defunct, actually.
Several years.
Yeah, about a decade, yeah. I think. And then one day in 2006, I think it was, Carol and I went down to at a conference in New Orleans together. And we had been meeting with about probably 10 of us once in a while to get together and just talk about stuff and do art and hang out. And
since 2000, I started getting everybody together in 2004.
That sounds right.
To try to get VADA going again.
Yeah, and we were doing with some supervision. I remember there was like group supervision going on and stuff like that. And so we were sitting there in the hotel room and we were like, well, should we start the chapter? And we were both like, yeah. Seems like I'm a cheerleader often for these kind of, I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we sat there right there in the hotel room and on Carol's laptop filled out our paperwork and got VADA started up again. And it was slow at first, but
There was like 10 of us, 10 or 15 art therapists at the time.
And I remember for a while our number hovered around 50 members for the first several years. And part of the reason that we were kind of interested in resurging our chapter was that we were talking about licensure stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was starting to ramp up a little bit, and we were excited about that. But at that time, you had to have a chapter to work towards licensure in a state. And I think even you had to have a certain amount of members, like 100 members was the cap for the licensure thing. That's changed completely now because now we have some states that don't even have chapters that are going for licensure. So which is what we're doing now, is going for licensure. We're well entrenched in a Sunrise Review, and I feel very good about this one.
That's right. Next week's show, we'll talk more about that process. So,
yes.
So we got, now we're up to how many members?
Yeah, I think we have close to 100. I'm not the membership director, so I don't know exactly, but I know we have, a good visibility. We have members from Norfolk area. We have members from our last student representative was all the way down in the very, very far southwestern corner of Virginia. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of presence in Charlottesville. We do have some art therapists in Lynchburg. We have, it seems like, a lot of us here in Richmond area. And then there's some, all the way up
Northern Virginia. We have, they're very prolific. Many of us, myself included, have presented at national and international conferences. People have written books. We have two schools located in Eastern Virginia Medical School, and George Washington University has their art therapy program located in Alexandria, I believe. So,
and that is also where the National American Art Therapy Association offices are, also in Alexandria. Currently.
Mm-hmm. We're something, right?
We are. It's a good profession. I find that most of the art therapists that I meet are very, very good people. They're very cool and smart. And it's very much a social justice profession. So I enjoy being around a lot of other art therapists. They have a lot of the same mindset that I do.
True, because many, like George Washington University, has programs where they take people overseas and work in disaster areas. So they'll send therapists, and they organize trips to send therapists quickly to respond, which is how one of our grandmothers of art therapy actually started doing work in the Holocaust.
Bobby?
The children. Edith Kramer, who worked specifically with children of the Holocaust.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I was thinking of Bobby Stoll, who worked for years and years with the Red Cross. She would go to all, like, the trauma areas, mm-hmm. the disaster areas, and do art therapy with those people. Talk about trauma work.
I tell you.
Yeah.
We gotta get that going here in Richmond.
Yeah.
New goal for VADA.
Okay, Carol.
No, wait. Slow down.
Slow down.
So for the younger art therapists in the room, where do you see yourselves as art therapists?
In 15 years.
15 years, yeah.
Silent.
So my dream is to have an art therapy program at VCU and either develop that, co-develop that, get it started. I think it's really important because the VCU hospital system is huge. Virginia Treatment Center for Children is the only, you know, acute inpatient psych, you know, in the state, is highly recognized in that way. You know, we have Norfolk and we have Alexandria. I think it's time for Richmond, for VCU to open up to that. There's so much potential in the healthcare system for art therapists to be employed and to be recognized as a clinical mental health practice. It is not classified under occupational therapy or recreation therapy. So I think there needs to be a lot of movement. And so I'm hoping in the next 15 years, the floodgates will open with that. I also hope to do more research because I also think that's a good way for people to learn about art therapy because a lot of people want to see numbers and we need more evidence-based practices in art therapy. I think it will also help regulate our profession as well.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Richmond Recovers, produced here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And today I'm co-hosting with Gretchen Graves, talking with local art therapists about art therapy. Now back to our show.
Right now in my life, at least, I'm really honing in my skills on assessment, and I think assessment is one of the most powerful tools in art therapy, at least where I work right now. And with the managed care system and insurance and everything like that, treatment is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So I think in order to be able to better assess and diagnose, I think that can facilitate the best treatment, even if it is in a short amount of time. So I have a lot of goals for art therapy. So talk to me in 15 years. We'll see what happens.
It's not bad. There is no PhD program currently in Virginia, so that is definitely an opening in which VCU, and, you know, that could be an area where VCU could step in, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Laura? Where do you see yourself in 15 years?
Layla, it sounds like you're going to need a nap after 15 years.
I know.
I'm really excited to hear all that, though, because we need it. I think there's a lot of parallels in what I'm hoping for in terms of where my focus will be. But my biggest passions within the field right now are accessibility and advocacy. So I started the private practice because I was seeing that art therapists were starting to pop up in my local communities within the agency setting, which has been awesome. But I saw a need for there to be a platform for the general community to access it as well. So that's one piece of the accessibility. I think as we hopefully move forward with our licensure process, that will layer in quite a bit more accessibility. And then the advocacy piece, you know, I certainly hope that as I continue down my path that I'll have more and more opportunities to do presentations. I've been kind of taking every opportunity that I've had so far to do that, just to get the word out in the community about what art therapy is and how people can take advantage of it. And then we do have this hope and passion developing within our practice of doing some research down the road as well to add to the to help to promote how sort of the numbers you were talking about, Layla, of how art therapy can be helpful and some more concrete examples.
What about you, Carol? Where do you see yourself in the art therapy world in 15 years?
Retiring. With you.
I think somewhere we will still be doing something because it's in our blood now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we may be technically retired, but somewhere Carol and I will be promoting art therapy and social justice.
You both will be professors at the VCU PhD.
Program. We're going to be working for Layla.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I already have you down.
All right.
Program director.
Job security.
Yeah, that's good. I need that.
That's fantastic.
Well, and, you know, it's funny. Throughout my career, I certainly have moved toward where I do more supervision now. I do more organizational development now. Helped a local therapist get her practice up and running, and you know, I'll be doing work with VADA in an organizational capacity. So I do see the evolution of having been a clinician and one who created jobs for myself to creating jobs for others, to running organizations, providing platforms for those to work on. So it is an interesting evolution as this field has grown, that I've gotten to do more of that, where that wouldn't have been possible when I started, you know, 20 years ago or 25 or 30.
It's grown a lot.
Oh my God. However many years ago it was.
It has. It's grown a lot, our field. It's been very interesting in the last 15 years to watch how it's growing. And going to conferences, going to national conferences is always very exciting. The energy that's there, and they get you all pumped up at the conferences, and you get to see other people from all over the world, really, and how they practice in the different areas, and the things they do is so innovative. It's really cool to see all that.
Yeah, it's unique. I often share with people that it's really fun to be able to go to conferences and be in the same room with some of the folks that created your profession.
Some of the grandmothers, right? I know, right? Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Kind of surreal experience.
It is, to sit down and have lunch with, like, Judith Kramer or Judy Rubin, or sitting down and talking to Bobby Stoll about doing trauma work over with the Red Cross. That's very cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday someone will sit down and want to have lunch with us and talk to us about the things you've done.
And we'll be back in the day.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Back in the day.
Art therapy conferences are the most fun. They really, because they have the huge, you know, not only do you get to, you know, be with this breadth and depth of work that people are doing in the therapeutic realms, and the amount of experience and the creativity, but they have a huge art room that you can go and make art in all day.
Yep, they do.
As well.
And they bring in great speakers that are not from our profession necessarily, but connect with our profession. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating to see that. I love that part.
The complementary aspect, yep. And we do. I mean, we're very complementary with music therapy and dance therapy and play therapy and other expressive arts, so... It is always nice to work in systems where you get to interact with other expressive specialties in art.
It is. So. People are always fascinated how the art therapy works. It sometimes, I think, seems kind of magical to some people. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of magical how our right and left brains cross over and can communicate our unspoken thoughts and our sometimes unacknowledged thoughts and feelings.
True, as a visual spatial and there's so much research now that goes into how visual spatial tasks help heal those with trauma, and art and the creation of art, you know, in an intentional therapeutic manner is a visual spatial task. So it makes total sense that something we knew as art therapists before others did. But if you just tuned in, you're listening to Rich and Recovers, produced here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And today I'm co-hosting with Gretchen Graves, talking with local art therapists about art therapy. Now back to our show. So anything else? Do you guys want to, as a couple of us mature people in the field and a couple younger people in the field, what would you say to the person out there contemplating studying art therapy in this day and age?
You got to fight. It's not for the weak. I'll tell you that. Every single day you have to be willing to advocate for your field, be called, you know, an art lady, art teacher. It's a never-ending thing, but it's so worth it. So you really have to have a strong heart and the ability to not take BS. That is something that I tell anyone that asks me about art therapy, because it's real and it's also empowering and necessary. We need more art therapists, but we need strong people who can advocate.
I mean, it's interesting. We still fight for credibility, and yet we're like the coolest. We're doing the coolest thing in the block. You know, the people want to do what we're doing, but we still have to fight for credibility that we are the ones trained to do it.
It's the craziest contradiction.
That's because some people are too lazy to go through everything that we've gone through to learn all the things. I think if you just pick up a crayon and let someone draw, well, that is stress relieving, but that's not necessarily applying therapy. Mm-hmm. That's not assessing, and that's not applying the therapeutic realm that you necessarily need to do. So it's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's completely
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important for anybody stepping into the field, just piggybacking what you're saying, Layla, to remember that what you're doing is important. I think it's really easy because oftentimes in our settings, we will be the only art therapist, and we sometimes get lost in some of the treatment teams that are set up. And so I think it's really important for everybody to remember that what you're doing is important, and to make sure that your voice and perspective is heard, because each and every one of those little moments adds up to greater awareness of what art therapy can actually do for folks.
Yes, it's important to continue to educate the people that we work with that don't mm-hmm. understand what art therapy is, what we can do with it, and how it should be used, that we're not there to be the craft lady. I'm not there to be the craft lady. I'm there to help a child on a journey mm-hmm. and let them make it to the other end if we can do that in a calm, peaceful manner.
Mm-hmm. And heal.
And heal. And heal. I'd like to ask if you guys could let me know, like, a moment in your art therapy practice that made you go, oh, yeah, this is so worth it. Can you remember, like, a moment, or do you have an example of a moment? Like, I can give you an example and jump you off on that. There are times sometimes when I have to go into a child's room and that child's dying, and they're actively dying, and everyone knows it. But when you put your art materials down in front of that child's face and you see a sense of relaxation in their eyes, and they're not thinking about the fact that they're dying, that is a very powerful moment for me. Mm. So I'm asking you guys if you can think of a time or something that is very powerful for you in your practices.
Something that I try to, the moments I try to hang on to that feed me each and every day, I mean, it depends on the setting that I've been in, but my mind is thinking about my private practice work right now. But any time that a client walks back through my door and says, oh my goodness, I cannot believe how much better I've been feeling. Oftentimes what I'll have is a fun conversation about a couple months into treatment where the client comes in and says, I thought you were crazy because you were asking me to do X, Y, and Z with art materials. And I was trying to explain to my friends and family what we were doing in here, and it was, they kept saying, okay, as long as that's working for you. But then they'll come back and say, now I really get it, and then I really see how it's impacting my ability to thrive. And that's just an incredible gift as a therapist, right? And those are the things that keep us coming back day after day.
I think, so obviously, I don't get to see the after effects of my work because they usually discharge really quickly. But I have had outpatient therapists who come to me and say, so-and-so has been drawing for me, and he really wants me to tell you that it really meant a lot to him, and art really helps him. So, like, I get these little bits like that. So even if you don't realize it in the moment, even if your patient doesn't realize in the moment, the art will help you, and it does sink in. And it's actually funny that because I work in a teaching hospital, I have a lot of medical students that come and observe me because they have no idea what I do, and I'm just talking about what I see in the drawings, and they're like, who is this lady? And I've actually had some medical students engage in the art during the group and then talk to me after and be like, I had no idea what it was like. And there are actually some who are now doctors who are painting now on their own. So it's just kind of like crazy that it's not limited to children. It's not limited to anyone who is in crisis at the moment. Art helps anyone who has a brain and a heart. It can help even someone as, you know, a thinker like a doctor or something like that. So I think it's one of those modalities where you have to actually, and I can talk to you about how art is helpful for your brain, it's good for you, you're going to relax, but until you engage in it, you really see the power of it.
And I think for me, when I'm working with families specifically, I work with trauma clients too, but some of my work with families and communication, whether they're dealing with, you know, the disintegration of a family and learning to communicate again, or whether family members are bringing new people in or somebody's gotten custody. There's many different ways I work with communication and families. But using art as a bridge and a healing tool for them. And I work in large sculptural things with families, so they do a lot of building. And using art as a catalyst for change, you know, both as a metaphor and physically. And it's neat watching them build these structures and get past those barriers, like right there in real time in front of me, and watch a family go through that system where the art is their platform in which to do that in. And, you know, I don't get to see that in any other way. And I think it's just more effective than just talk therapy, because they're interacting in a therapeutic realm, and it becomes a catalyst for change as well. So it's fun. And they make really cool stuff. That's what I think. Well, any last words before we close today? We look forward to having y'all back again on Richmond Recovers. Thank you so much, Gretchen, for
joining
Carol. Me today as co-host.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Laura and Layla.
All right. We'll be talking about art therapy again next week, as we have members of the VADA board and a couple of representatives from George Washington University and EVMS here to talk about the licensure process for art therapy in Virginia. So stay tuned and come back next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another broadcast of Richmond Recovers, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. Now, after a short station break, we'll return with Sammy Styles and his segment, Peer to Ear.